Good morning. So I'm Ross McDonald. I'm the medical director for the Bureau of Correctional Health Services at the New York City Department of Health. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about traumatic brain injury. First, I'll give a brief definition and particular mention why we think it may be particularly important for criminal justice populations. And then I'll talk a little bit about how we sought to define the prevalence of traumatic brain injury in adolescents newly committed to our jail system, and also the incidence, so the actual traumatic brain injury events sustained while incarcerated. So traumatic brain injury is defined by the American College of Rehab Medicine as an induced physiologic disruption of brain function as manifested by one of the following. So loss of consciousness, loss of memory, alteration of mental state, or focal neurologic deficits. And for the purposes of our study and within our system, this is also how we define traumatic brain injury. It's the leading cause of death and disability in children, with about 400,000 brain injuries in children under 15 each year. And it's generally known to be more prevalent in adolescents or have a higher incidence in adolescents, so that more than half of TBI occurs before the age of 25. Most of these incidents are mild, so in 80 to 90% of the cases, people will make a complete recovery, with a small subset of patients having chronic disability. And the recovery process can be quite lengthy. It usually takes weeks and can often take many months until people reach their baseline, if they do. Mild TBI, as I said, is much more common, and the prevalence and incidence of this condition in the community are often hard to define because people may not seek medical care, even though many mild TBI cases will lead to lasting deficits in about 15% of the cases. The majority of pediatric TBIs are mild. About 15% of cases will require hospitalization and long-term rehab. But in particular, we're interested in the sequela of even mild TBI in our population, which is much more common. So some of the hallmarks of the downstream effects of TBI are impairments in brain function associated with the parts of the brain that can be injured. The frontal lobe, in particular, can lead to deficits in planning, anticipation, problem solving, judgment, personality, emotions, and the ability to inhibit responses. And the temporal lobe can lead to slowed processing and slowed understanding of language, as well as memory and learning. So if you think about these particular downstream effects and you think of adolescents in a jail, we have concerns that sustaining TBI in jail or shortly before jail or multiple TBIs over the course of time, which may have additive effects, can hinder our patients' ability to navigate the jail environment. So a lot of some key recommendations for the treatment of TBI in adolescents is to try to shelter them from high-risk decision-making, from overstimulation, and oftentimes from schoolwork for a period of time. And if you think about these particular recommendations, they're essentially the opposite of what our adolescents find themselves in the jail environment. It's often a place where they have to make high-risk decisions on a daily basis, often just to maintain their own personal safety. So part of our key concern about TBI in our population is the notion that it may lead to further violence and further injury, sort of like a downward spiral for adolescents in the jail setting, because it makes it even harder for them to defend themselves, to act in ways that might protect themselves from further violence. Indeed, TBI in prison has been associated with infraction. So we also are concerned that this slowness of processing oftentimes can be interpreted as insubordination. So when a corrections officer gives you a command, it's not in your best interest to respond to it slowly, and a poor understanding of the downstream consequences of TBI could lead to corrections officers feeling that they're being disrespected, and this can lead to problems, including infraction. There was a prospective cohort study published in 2010, which defined individuals with medically attended TBI. So these are people who went from the prison to the hospital or to the emergency room with TBI diagnoses. And they found a prevalence of about just over 1% in males and just under 1% in females. And after controlling for many factors, age, violent crime conviction, prior criminal history, security level, and sentence length, they did actually find a higher rate of infraction per year in the cohort of people who had sustained TBI in the prison. It's very hard to establish causality with this because many of the downstream effects may also be personal characteristics that might predispose people to TBI. But this is some evidence to suggest that this relationship that we hypothesize may actually exist, so that people who have sustained TBI may be more at risk to run afoul of jailhouse rules or just generally to not do well in jail or in prison. So what can we do in jail? We sought out to assess the prevalence in our incoming adolescents, as I mentioned, using the TBIQ, which is a validated screening instrument that has been used in correctional settings before, and also to assess the incidence using injury surveillance. So for the prevalence, we applied the TBIQ to a total of 384 patients. These were adolescents newly committed to the jail system. That was 300 males and 84 females. We found an overall prevalence in our population of adolescents of about 50% of a history of TBI. We split them into three different groups: those with no injury or one minimal head injury with no altered mental status. That was basically the no TBI group. The intermediate group were patients who had multiple minimal head injuries, and the TBI group was one or more injury with altered mental status, which is the hallmark of TBI. And we looked for associations with a variety of clinical factors. So I'll just point out a few of the statistically significant associations. So we found that TBI was associated with M status, which in our system is a marker for mental health contact. So we know that the patients who had sustained TBI were more likely to be engaged in mental health services in our setting. We also found that the TBI group had a higher number of total injuries of any kind, and that both the multiple minimal and the TBI group had higher rates of assault-related injuries of any kind. The last two columns there, the TSSI and TSFI, refer to two indices of symptoms that can be related to TBI. So one is a symptom severity scale, and the other is a symptom frequency scale. And we found that for the TBI group, for both of these indices, they exhibited both more severe and more frequent symptoms that are associated with TBI. These are things like emotional dysregulation, everything ranging from difficulty concentrating, difficulty finding words, to difficulty keeping track of things in your daily life. As I said, causation is difficult here because many of these factors may also predispose people to TBI. But we do think that the relationship at least works both ways. And we know that these factors are highly correlated with patients who have sustained TBI in the past. So as I said, about 45%. We did not find any relationship to recidivism or arrest, though the rates of recidivism or arrest in this population were very high. We looked at the relationship to solitary confinement, and found that about 40% of the adolescents that we screened had had at least one stay in solitary, but we didn't find a clear statistically significant relationship between TBI and placement in solitary. So we also sought to define the incidence in our setting. And we did this using our electronic medical record, which has a structured area for our clinicians to report any injury visit, any injury encounter that they see. And this is a very important tool that we can use to systematically track injuries in our jail setting, and to query this data so that we can track injury rates over time, by facility, by type, and communicate that information to our colleagues in the Department of Correction. We added three questions that were markers of mild traumatic brain injury to this injury template or screening tool. So any injury visit that was seen in our system would have had this template merged in and these questions answered. The key questions were, did a patient have a blow to the head? Did the patient ever lose consciousness? Was the patient ever dazed and confused? And the blow to the head question plus either of the other two would define TBI for the purposes of our study. So we looked between June 1st, 2012 and September 30th, 2013, which was about 16 months of data. During that period of time, we had over 20,000 injuries among adults and over 4,000 injuries among adolescents. And what we found was that on average, about 13% of those injuries involved head injury. And of the head injuries, about 19% led to TBI, for a total of about 2% of all injuries in our system resulting in TBI. Interestingly, we did not find a statistically significantly higher rate of TBI among adolescents than we did among adults, which is generally a well-established connection between adolescents and higher rates of TBI in the community. We did not see in our jail, and we're still thinking about why that might be. So just to compare this incidence to the community. So the incidence of TBI is a little bit hard to pin down in the community. And the reason for that is that there are multiple different definitions. And also, as I mentioned, it's only estimated what percentage of total TBIs that occur in the community might actually reach medical attention. So a 2004 review looked at all the studies that had sought to define incidence of TBI in the community, and they found a range of about 100 to 300 per 100,000 person years. And they estimated that the true incidence could be as high as 600 or more, based on those cases that didn't present to medical attention. More recently, there was a study in New Zealand that really worked hard to cast a wide net in the community to try to find all cases of even mild TBI, and they found a higher prevalence of TBI of 790 per 100,000 person years using various forms of medical data, including ED records, hospital discharge, and also primary care visits. So we're using active surveillance to find TBI in our system, and that's an important caveat because you would expect us to find many more instances. So we would have a lot less of this phenomenon of people not reaching medical care, because in the jail system, really every injury, for the most part, a much higher percentage of injuries or even non-injuries are presented to medical care for evaluation than they would be in the community. So many things that wouldn't get evaluated if an adolescent sustained it at home do get evaluated in the jail. But even so, we found an alarmingly high rate of TBI. So our prevalence among adolescents was about 3,100 per 100,000 person years, which is higher than anything that's been described in the literature. Also important that about 51% of those in our system ended up seeing an ER doctor. So you could estimate there are still factors that might make it different from the community, but you could estimate or postulate that maybe about half of those would have been identified from a community study that was just looking at ER contacts. So any way you slice it, it's a very high rate of TBI. So what can we do in jail? We can provide acute care for serious, particularly serious cases of TBI and potentially rehab if it's indicated, but that's really a small minority of the cases that we see. We've sought to provide some programming, particularly to adolescents, and part of our rationale for defining the prevalence was to map out a system of group treatment and also just raising the awareness of this problem among our adolescent population. Potentially, we could become involved in legal cases if there are specific cases where we could make a cogent argument that a history of traumatic brain injury may have influenced someone's criminal justice involvement. And as we all echoed here, we could send fewer people to jail as a society because we know that this is a particular risk of jail. And we're open to any suggestions for other things that we might do. Thank you.